Good to see everybody. We're going to get right into things today. If you would turn over the book of Zechariah, if you are visiting with us or haven't been here through this study, it's going to be a little different than normally we do. Just hold that place in Zechariah 1, and you can put a bookmark and close your Bible. It'll be just a few minutes before I get there. The first slide or two is going to be really a little bit on, it relates to our study. It also relates to what's going on in Israel. And then we're going to get into our event kind of study. And if everything goes well, we'll cover about maybe three of those. We'll see how it goes and keep moving down the track. We have this one from the Western Journal. And I picked this one and the next one because it's interesting that the journalists are starting to say, I wonder if God is getting involved in what's going on over here. This one says, hand of God, earthquake strikes Syria and Lebanon the same day the attack by Hezbollah against Israel was anticipated. Now, since the death of some of the major leaders in Hamas and Hezbollah, Iran has been threatening to strike back. And this has been going on now for a few weeks, and you know, you even wonder if it's going to happen. And there was a certain day, about 4 or 5 days ago, that everybody, I mean, that you would listen to, expected it to be pretty much that night. And it didn't happen that night. One of the reasons might be that they were bluffing anyway. Another reason was God sent a major earthquake over that direction. It not only shook everything, but this one is from the Jerusalem Post. You can read it, but and Jerusalem Post is wondering, do we have divine protection? Because they had stored a bunch of major weapons stash in one of the tunnels, and that tunnel was crushed by the earthquake. And so people are saying, wow, I mean, is God active? And you know, God doesn't we don't speak to God like Adam and Eve did. We're not in that time period. We don't speak to God. God does not speak to us like he spoke to Moses. We're not in that time period. In our time period, the age of the church, God and Paul explain this to us, but we've got the finished work of God. We've got it here. And so he gave this to us. He preserved it for us to have. So through prayer and through the Bible, that's the way we walk by faith. That's the way that in this time period that we live in, this church age, that's the way it goes. So, but that does not mean God is sitting there asleep. God is still as active as he ever was, and so we will see these kind of things, and you can be sure that God's watching everything. Now I'm aware that the last few hours, maybe a day. Israel, I don't even have a slide for it because by the time this happened and I realized it, and I'd already sent my slides in to Brother David to load on the system, but of course Israel has been defending themselves from the north, from Hezbollah in the north for all this time on just, a number of launches against them every day. The Iron Dome's picking them up. But today, in the last few hours, Israel's being aggressive and has sent the IDF in and quite a few strikes, and so the thing is on. We're going to see how that goes over the next several days. It's never smart to go against what God's doing, and you know we've talked about that several times in here. It's very important as a nation that we line ourselves up on God's side. Anytime, in fact, you see if you realize direction God's going, it's good to get on that train, isn't it? It's good to follow God. It's certainly not good to work against God. And this article came out from the LA Times, which I rarely quote the LA Times. I only do it for an example. But this guy writes that right now, this is written just a couple of days ago, this is Biden's chance to end the war in Gaza, just threatened to cut off the weapons for Israel. That is not smart. No, we need to be supporting Israel. This is the whole day, by the way, and I say this every time, I know you're tired of hearing it. What I'm about to talk about is not a political lesson. I'm going to talk about, before I'm done with this, I've already talked about, you know, people, presidents and administrations from both parties, and I will, continue to do that because it's a spiritual thing that folks need to understand. But in this day and age, you know, we certainly need to do our part and pray for our leaders that they'll make good decisions and pray for Israel. We're commanded to do that. I would say this. This guy wrote that, but in fact, when it was rumored that Iran was gearing up and Hezbollah were gearing up, the United States we have sent a lot of stuff over there, major artillery and some of the big guns, and it was said we're going to send 4,000 Marines. I don't know if they're there yet, but nevertheless. We have been, the Biden administration has been slow walking what they're doing, but they got busy right there, so that is good news. I'm going to, though, continue, and I won't be forever on this. It's just something we're doing right now, but for those of you that are, I know Gerald is on vacation, and so we've got a lot of people that haven't been in our class in a while, and you're more than welcome. We are in the midst of a study. We were in Genesis, and I was leading up to some things, and we got to the part in Genesis where God told Abraham, I'm going to bless those that bless you and curse those that curse you. So I sort of used that and took off on this study for us to understand that God's word is true. He will bless those that bless. That law still stands today. God will bless those that bless Israel, and he will curse those that curse Israel. And this study I actually had done 10 years ago, and I haven't even gotten to the current part yet, but I'm going to bring it all the way up to date to 2024. But we had started way back in the Jimmy Carter administration, then on into the other presidents. And when you look at these things, just to explain it, and I don't know if you can read that, and I know the print's small and all that, we've covered seven events, and these are the dates that it happened, and this is the U.S. I said it's Israel event, but it's really when the U.S. Led an effort against Israel for some reason or another, and on the very day, kind of a key day for that, some big thing. Catastrophe would happen in the U.S. And and I'm not going to go over them again because but you know, we've had Hurricane Andrew, the Mississippi River floods, an earthquake in Northridge, California, so forth. These 9/11 we talked about as well, 562 tornadoes. None of these were just thunderstorms. In every case, it was the worst at the time that our country had ever, the worst earthquake at the time our country had ever suffered. The worst hurricane at the time our country had ever suffered. The worst damage in dollar amount of damage on the tornadoes that our country had ever suffered. Every single time it was a major event that happened to our country on the same day or thereabouts when we had done something. And so some of you from the other class may have even been here 10 or 12 years ago when I've gotten to this part, and we'll be plowing some new ground, though, soon. But I'm going to keep moving here. And I like this chart for only one reason, and that is this dot right here, right there. And that's 2003. So this is the temperature in Europe from 1900 to 2003. Now, forget this. I nearly didn't show this. I thought I need to change that slide out because I don't like it, because it's a climate change guy that says the temperatures are going to go up here. You know, nobody knows that. So far, they haven't. I mean, you know. So I apologize. I only did it because I want to show that, sure enough, in 2003, you see that dot right there? That's how hot it got in Europe. Now, what would cause that? Well, that's what we're going to talk about. So up till now, we've mostly talked about the U.S. Pushing policies against Israel that would take away some of their land that God had given them. And we've been spent some time going through the fact that God has given Israel this land. Now, in about 2003, the rest of the world started getting involved, especially Europe. Now, I'm going to talk about, in your Bible, in Zechariah chapter 1, I want you to see verse 18. We covered the whole book of Zechariah a few months ago, and I mentioned this at the time, but I told you I would develop it later, and I'm developing it now today. But just look at these four verses, if you would, for me, verse 18. Zechariah chapter 1, verse 18, "Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem." Now let me just keep reading here, and then I'll say a word. "The Lord showed me four carpenters. Then said I, What come these to do? And he spake, saying, These are the horns that have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these are come, the carpenters are come, to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it." So some things we learned there is there's, first off, a horn. The horns refer to Gentile groups of people. That's what it says there. Maybe Gentile nations, but I think Gentile groups of people. And there's four of them. And for every single one of them, you notice that God prepares a carpenter to go take care of them, to fray them. Fray means make them do something so severe to them that it makes them afraid. Now, it would take a lot to make some countries afraid of God. But that's what God had in mind, and that's what's going to happen. That this prophecy has not fully been played out. I'm not 100% certain it pertains to what I'm going to call the quartet, the people that call themselves the quartet, but I believe that it does. Sometimes prophecies have different meanings, and sometimes they occur more than once in time periods. But specifically here, we know that there's going to be four groups of Gentile nations that are going to try to scatter Israel. And God's going to deal with them. And so here we go. We introduce this thing called, that they call themselves the quartet. The quartet was the United States, the European Union primarily, the UN, and Russia. Now we know Russia's on the outs right now. And so the quartet, of course, is limping on three legs rather than four because of the situation with Russia. But back in this time, this was the group that was trying to scatter Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And we'll see this. So you'll see some people you recognize in these photos. But they met, and of course, they're talking about Israel giving up some land. Israel was usually never invited to these meetings. This really got underway the summer of 2003. That's when they were meeting, planning, we're going to do this, we're going to do that against either 2003. They met all summer, and guess what? All summer long, Europe cooked. This heat wave settled in there in the same time. Now, a couple of 3 weeks ago, one of the things we talked about was 9/11. And 9/11 was a catastrophe for our nation, but it also changed the world, didn't it? Changed the world in a lot of ways. We lost over 3,000 people 9/11. Just as a comparison, it changed the world. It was a catastrophe, 3,000 people. This heat wave, 52,000 people lost their lives. 52,000 people. This is the countries and the deaths and total of the same. You say coincidence, that's what the world would say. All this is just coincidence that it happened. I'm just saying that's a big number to occur all that summer that the quartet met and worked against Israel. It is never a good idea. And I'm going to show we're going to have some more examples here, so let's just keep going. This is event number 9, just back in our country, Hurricane Katrina. Now, I'm going to show you this slide. This is a tank that's going into Gaza. So you might think, except I got the date up there, but you might think, wow, that's 2024. That's the IDF going into Gaza to clean out the Hamas. No, this is August 15th, 2005. The IDF was in Gaza, but they were not going after Palestinians or Hamas. Who were they going after in 2005? Their own people. They were going in and yanking the Jews out of Gaza. So let me just talk about that just a minute. George W. Bush was our president. This is the Gaza Strip. It's in our news and we all know it right here. Bordered on Egypt and the southern part of Israel. And George W. Bush and the quartet and others, but especially George Bush, he pressured Prime Minister Sharon into implementing what actually had been agreed to in the Jimmy Carter days when they did the agreement then. But it had not really been implemented in the Gaza Strip. And the idea was, get the Jews out of there and we're going to have peace. Well, how did that work out? Not too well, did it? Not too well. And so there was a time period given that all Jews, this is land God gave to Israel. Now, I will concede that there's been a lot of time where even in David and Solomon's day that the Philistines were here and it's not really been in Israel's possession very much, but it was inside the land grant that God gave to Israel. Sharon agreed to it. Sharon agreed. George Bush had pressured it. It got down to the last 48 hours, and there were still some Jews in the land. Israel sent and had to. We pressured them to their own army in to get their own people and haul them out of Jerusalem. Severe criticism of Bush and severe criticism of Prime Minister Sharon by Israel. The rest of the world was rejoicing as they would do this. They just hauled them out, especially the last 48 hours as they were cleaning them. The removal was complete on August 23rd, 2005. August 23rd, 2005. Just remember the date, August 23rd, 2005. There's a verse in Zephaniah. I'm not going to take time to turn there. The verse has not found full fulfillment yet. But that first phrase is fulfilled. Gaza was forsaken. For Gaza shall be forsaken, the Bible said. You notice in some of these cities, Ashkelon's a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod and so forth. Actually, the Bible is so accurate to every letter, to every punctuation, the Bible is accurate. Gaza was forsaken by Israel. Nobody defeated them. They forsook it, just like the Bible says. August 23rd, 2005. So then all that was left at the moment was Palestinians. They had an election. Who's going to be our leader? Is it going to be the guys over here in the Abbas and the guys over here in the West, what's called the West Bank, or is it going to be Hamas? And of course, they voted for Hamas to be their leader. That is the reason Hamas is there, because of this thing. And of course, they got they brought their rockets with them from that they had gotten from Iran. And so you see all these different kinds of rockets they've got, and that's the reason since then it's been a disaster of a decision, a huge strategic mistake. What date did I say? August 23rd, 2005. On August 23rd, I show you this. This is an actual, map, and it's got I didn't put the date. The date is here, right? You see that? Where it says Hurricane Katrina, there's the date, August 23rd. The weathermen and ladies notice this tropical depression shows up out of nowhere on August 23rd. And the thing weakened. Nobody even thought too much about it for a day or two, and then all of a sudden it gained a lot of strength as it got in the warm waters of the Gulf. And here it is on the 28th as it heads straight for New Orleans. And everybody knew it was strong and it's going to go and hit New Orleans. Some of you probably, how many of you remember Hurricane Katrina? Yeah. We're getting into a time period now we can remember things, and so they evacuated New Orleans. 1.1 million people in certain areas had to evacuate, and I mean, they're all leaving New Orleans. I do not know what this fellow is doing. My wonder is, did he forgot his charging cord and had to go back and get it? I don't know. But it, of course, the hurricane hit, and it's one thing about the rain, but in New Orleans, they live in a bowl. If you're familiar with it, they kind of live in a bowl, and they got these levees, and the levee burst. And so it just filled up the place. And so that's what it looked like. And you know, just a huge, huge disaster. But that certainly wasn't the whole story, was it? The story then became the Superdome. And you remember, look at all that water. 25,000, so 1.1 million evacuated, 25,000 people stayed in that Superdome because they didn't have means to evacuate, 25,000 people. There was a little bit of food and water there, but what happened is when the levee broke, water everywhere is very difficult to get any new supplies in there. The restrooms all backed up, and the air conditioning was poor, or something happened to that, and it got to be an oven. Little water and little food, and I mean scathing criticism of George Bush and FEMA. When all this happened, I mean, it just you may remember that. I mean, it was a major humanitarian disaster, and also politically a major disaster. Bush had to stand up with FEMA. You remember several times, and he was trying to be on the front line with it. But FEMA, this is really where FEMA got the bad name. And you might notice, since this moment, Katrina, when we got any kind of disaster, FEMA is on it. The other day, a few months ago, I preached in Ruidoso 2 weeks ago, and I was supposed to preach in, I think it was June, and that's when they had the fires and then the floods and so forth, and it caused a lot of issues, and they all had to evacuate, and the church people had to evacuate, so it got moved to August. But, he said, FEMA was there. And they brought up, because no more was that going to happen where they really looked so bad. And you know it's bad when your president has to stand up in front of the country with a thing that says lessons learned from Hurricane Katrina. And you know, you're in trouble when that happens. But to really know how he was in trouble is this. Look at this. Now, I know we're in a political season. So just put it, this has nothing to do with politics. Remember that. Okay, this is here's the dates of 2001 to 2008, the George Bush presidency. This is his popularity. After 9-11, so he was rocking along here before 9-11 at about over 50% approval and about 40% disapproval, and that's about normal. If you can be 50-55% approval, and, because the other side, it's pretty much balanced, right, between the two parties. And so if you got 55% approval and you got 40% that don't approve, and 5% that don't care, then you're actually doing pretty well. But after 9-11, George Bush had handled that so well. And because of the patriotism that came and so forth, he actually had a 90% approval and 10%, less than 10%, disapproval. I mean, that was miraculous. When a president's rocking along at 90%. Now, because then he went in Iraq and so forth, not all this was caused by Katrina. He went in Iraq, and so he had gotten back down in this 50% range. This star right here is what the time is exactly. I put the star myself. I tried to center it on the exact time of Katrina. That's exactly when the red line crossed the blue. And he ended up at about 60% disfavorable and about 30-some-odd percent, which at the time was pretty considered to be pretty low. And so even today, when you look at our president, it's pretty low, and they always compare it to Bush will be ones they compare it to. His rating went among the people went down because of Hurricane Katrina. And he, when he left office, was very unpopular for a lot of reasons. One of those being, it was really Katrina that started that downward trend below the red line. By the way, what about Prime Minister Sharon? Prime Minister Sharon suffered a stroke pretty quick after he signed the Gaza deal with Bush. And for 3 or 4 months, he laid as an invalid, and then he passed away. And what is said is, if you can read it yourself, if you want to call it meaningful, but the last, the quote will be, if you find it, is it, the last meaningful thing he did was he abandoned Gaza in his life. That's what happened to him. George Bush was not finished. He got on the front cover of The Economist. He was called Mr. Palestine, and so he went ahead with his roadmap to peace, and his roadmap to peace meant Israel had to give up the land. And so what he decided to do is, I'm going to ratchet up this quartet, and we're going to get this done. We're going to get the Palestinians into a country. And so that's going to lead us into, and the next one's going to take me some time to develop here, that's going to lead us into number 10. So we've done all these now. Number 10 is, he's going to accelerate this roadmap to peace. And upon the United States, we had the global financial crisis of 2007 and 2008, if you remember that. So, quartet comes up. Now we've got, they're getting to work on this two-state solution, getting it back on track. And so, I just remind you of the verses there in Zechariah that, so right now, when you have the UN, you've got U.S., UN, you've got EU, and Russia. You pretty much got the whole world, you know, in one way or another, either through their membership in the UN or otherwise. You got the whole world involved here. So God himself, he got kind of involved in the whole world as well. This is July 23rd, 2007. Tony Blair was a prime minister of England. He's a good friend of George W. Bush, and his term was over there. And so he took over leadership of the quartet, and George Bush told him, get this two-state solution done. And that's what Tony Blair has tried to do ever since, unsuccessfully. Now, they came up with that. We're going to have this big conference in Annapolis. You may even remember it. It was a big thing. Everybody came. And, here's Condoleezza Rice, who, by the way, is a smart person, but for some reason got on the wrong side and still is today is on the wrong side of the Israel issue, in my opinion, at least. All the quartet was there, and the goal was to establish the state of Palestine, get it established, and look for Mideast peace. And, of course, there's a lot of things, but a lot of countries showed up because they thought that, the United States wants it. This is kind of the way the U.S., does things, is you start getting millions of dollars thrown into something for some reason or another. And we're really got a habit of doing that, showing up, and all these countries show up and say, we'll do this, and give them all this money. There was a joke by President Trump said this. He said, you may have heard it. He said, I don't know. He said, I don't know if there's people on Mars. I don't know. But I hope there's not, because if there are, the United States will send them money. I thought that was pretty smart, We'd just send them some money. Well, that's what was happening here. We were getting ready to write them a lot of money, and all of a sudden, same time, same day, same month have started, although this thing was cooking earlier, God gave the world something else to worry about, and it was a global financial crisis. It hit us, but it was a global financial crisis. And everything in 2007 and 8 revolved around this financial crisis. Now, you might wonder, why did he put a slide of the Beverly Hillbillies on that? The younger folks in here might not even know who this is. How many of you do not? How many of you remember? Yeah. So he's over there, Jed Clampett's over there. This is fictional for the kids and the younger ones, and it's fictional. He's over there, they strike oil. They're hillbillies, and they strike oil. And next thing you know, he moves to Beverly Hills in California, and he's got $42 million. And he puts his money in a bank, and Mr. Drysdale is the character, and he's the banker. And a few days later, Jed wants to see his money, see what $42 million looks like. So they show up at the bank, say, "We want to see our money." And Mr. Drysdale says, "Well, doesn't really work like that, we've got your $42 million, but it's all invested and stuff." So Jed, you might remember that episode. He takes his money. Says, "I got to take my money out of here. I want to go to a place that takes care of my money." Well, in fact, that's just the way it works, So if, for example, Brother Elvis, if he goes down to the bank tomorrow and he deposits $1 million in that bank, what are they going to do with that million? Then I show up and maybe I sweet talk and my charm, I get $1 million loan. They give Brother Elvis 5% interest, but they charge me 8 or 9, see? And so they make the difference on that interest. And if Brother Elvis goes in there later and says, "I want to see my money," they might or might not can scrape up $1 million to show him, right? Probably won't. And so banks a long time ago handled their own kind of money, but way back they figured out that's really not going to work. And so what they created is a pool of money that they could borrow from each other at a very low rate. And so basically, if Brother Elvis wants his money and the bank doesn't really have it, what they would do is they go over here. There's a low rate. They can just borrow it from another bank, get Brother Elvis his money back if he needs it, and that's how there's liquidity, they call it, in the system, and it flows through this very low interest rate. Now, all of that is fine as long as things are rolling good and going along. Now, there's some different. I'm not going to show you everything. I just pulled this one. This is from the Federal Reserve. I think it's the Federal Reserve in Missouri. You can go online and find this exact chart and plenty of others. This is 1990. So before in the Carter years. So there's what's called a Ted spread, which is, just simply, if you got a treasury bill, it's a stable interest rate, the treasury bill. The LIBOR, or this, just simply call it this pool of money with the banks, that changes. So if the bankers, if I'm a bank and I've got a lot of cash, and you're wanting a 2% loan, you're another bank, you're wanting a 2% loan. If things are going okay, I'm happy, because I'm getting some, giving some. So. But if we're in a period of I'm worried about something here, then I say, look, I'm not giving that. I'm not putting any more money in there until it goes to 2.5 or 3. And so it goes up. And so this is essentially a ratio of that LIBOR to a treasury bill. And when it goes up, it means it is going up it's a measure of credit risk. It's saying we got a problem out here. There's defaults going on, and the thing went up. So, for example, in 2007, when the financial crisis, it went way up to here, higher than it had ever been, because this credit risk widened for the banks. I'm just going to give you this so you have something to worry about. And I hope our pastor, maybe he'll preach about don't worry, we're not supposed to worry. So that'll rebuke me, see, and I'll ask forgiveness. I didn't realize this, because I could always go on there and look at this if I wanted to. You see where it says discontinued? For some reason, let me just be non-political and say the current administration I don't even know what I want to say here. I know what I want to say. Remember I told you sometimes I'd have to filter a lot of things? Filter, be careful what I say. Some questionable decisions have been made in this country financially. Let's just be honest about it. And all of a sudden, I'm going to try this week, if I have time and think about it, I'm going to try to calculate this manually. There's enough data in there I think I can. But for some reason, when Bidenomics hit, let me just be honest, they quit calculating this thing. They just quit doing it. And there has to be a reason for that. They have done this for years, many years. That was the standard. You looked at, because you could measure credit risk, and they stopped doing that for some reason. Now, are we in a big mess? Well, that's easy to see. I mean, you know, so I don't know, but why would, you know, I mean, I don't know what's going on there. Let me get back to my business here, 2007, 2008. Of course, what happened, as you know, is that this is a house price. 2007, price of houses dropped and crashed. And what happened, I'm just going to go simply here, but what happened is they created something called the subprime borrower. And if somebody wasn't really qualified for a house, what they do is charge them more for interest rate and go ahead and loan it to them. And so people all over the place would go in and get high rate loans, but they would get a house. Well, if you're already a subprime borrower and you get charged more than your neighbor, you have a little trouble making your payment. And so, of course, then you had the crash. The problem was, this bank, this subprime lender here, who had loaned the money to the subprime borrower, they didn't really have any money. They got the money from this group, this big group. How many of you have heard of Fannie or Freddie Mae? So, yeah, they were kind of a bank that would take in money from hedge funds, insurance companies, pension funds. People lost their pension through this mess. You know, there was a lot of money lost. Certain investors. And they'd give money, and then they would rank it low risk, medium risk, high risk. These subprime loans were high risk. And so this Freddie and Fannie Mae would give this to this subprime lender, and they'd give it to the borrower. But when the borrower didn't pay, the bank then took the house. But what happens when if there's one house, not a problem. When there's millions of houses, what happens? They're not worth very much. And so, of course, they were selling houses 50% on the dollar. And pretty soon, there's no money in the LIBOR because banks, what are they going to do? They're watching that chart and they say, we're in a mess. We're not putting money in the LIBOR. We're not loaning money to other banks. And so everything just completely shut down. And of course, it caused a huge crash. Stock market crashed. Everything crashed. And people lost, everyday Americans, you know, lost pensions. Some of you may have even been affected. The largest lender at the time was Countrywide Financial. They're now owned by Bank of America. You may still get a statement, because of how they do on your home loans. If you have a home loan, you may still have one that says Countrywide Financial, but there is no such thing, really. They're owned by Bank of America. But at the time, that was the United States' largest home lender, and they went bankrupt. They went bankrupt. The largest bank in England. Now, the British pound, historically, is a place of stability. And, of course, the whole financial system that England, when they kind of had the control of the world, you know, in the early 1900s, let's say, I mean, they established a very stable financial system. Northern Rock, the largest bank in England, crashed during this. This was a global thing. Remember now, the globalists all decided we're going to all meet for a Israel bazaar and all get some money out of this thing, and we're going to tear a lot of land away from Israel. That never happened. You know why? God gave the world something else to worry about at the exact same time. This is Northern Rock stock. I mean, if you owned that at that time, you know. This is Bank of America. They're still going. You know why they're going? Because we bailed them out. The United States government bailed them out. The question, we all paid, you know, it's part of the $35 trillion we owe right now. But we owe a lot more than that, really. The question became, are we going to bail out Freddie and Fannie Mae? Because they were the ones holding the bag on trillions of debt. And that was the question. And sure enough, we did. We did not bail them out. You know what happened? The government just took them. We just took them over. Said, we're going to just take them over, because then we got it, and whatever they have to do, we'll just print some money and push it over there. And so when somebody, you look at our debt clock today, it's going to say around $35.1 trillion, I believe, something like that. Let me just tell you, ultimately, if you really get down in the crevices, we owe a lot more than that if you were really going to clean all this up. Instead of cleaning it up, though, of course, a lot of things went bankrupt. Lehman Brothers, the most stable financial firm at the time in the United States, 150 years old. Our country was, 200 and plus years old, a little over, 10% older than that. Let's say, I didn't write down the exact time. Lehman was 150 years old. I mean, it was an old, conservative financial institution, went bankrupt. And of course, that sent shockwaves around the world. How many of you remember when Enron collapsed? Enron collapsed. It was considered a big deal. Everybody remembers it. The bankruptcy was $63.4 billion. $63 billion. Lehman, $639 billion. 10 times larger than Enron. Went under. I'm just trying to show you the depths of this thing and how that God decided, no, we're not going to do that. No, we're going to, world said we're going to split up Israel. God said we're not. And so he gave us, you say, no, I don't think it's good to blame God for this. I'm just saying one after another, it happens at the exact same time we try to say we're controlling Israel's land. When the Bible clearly says God told us he was controlling Israel's land. So, you know, it became a question of who's next, and many others went down. The stock market went down. It was, so if you had a 401k, even if you didn't lose your pension, you had a 401k you lost. Now, somebody would say, well, it went back up. Think about those that had to have that money at that time. That's what you could say. And so there's I thought I had one more. Yeah, that one. It's at the bottom, it just says, I thought we were just buying a house. Somebody just buys a house, and yet the whole world financial system was tied to that. And still today, it is a little bit tied to that. Now, Brother David's not going to believe me, but I'm on slide 64, and I made it to the end. I know when I sent all those slides to him, he thought, I don't know why he's sending me these slides. He'll never get half of those, but I'm going to report to him. I did. We've covered. I mean, this is the worst. I don't know what we've got cooking right now, really, but this is up to this point in time, 2007, this is the worst financial crisis the United States and the world had ever seen. Now, I'm going to just give you a hint on, as we start next week, on something that happened April 20th, 2010. So you might just think, well, what happened April 20th? I didn't put it up there. Just so you can think about it this week. We're going to keep going here for another week or two as I kind of move through these. But our point is not to give the news. It's not to give the history lesson. It's not that it is because, I mean, when it is common knowledge in our country that we have protesters that are making a difference in our country and in our elections to be against Israel, you know, somebody needs to stand up and say, wait a minute, God's for Israel. We better be sure on which side we get on. And that's why I'm trying to do this, and why, I mean, I know Many Christians, not you. I know many Christians that don't have a clue which side to be on because nobody's told them. And so that's why I'm taking 2 or 3 weeks to do this, and we're going to keep going until I get to a current day, and then we'll keep moving with the other things that we had in mind. I do have several things I really want to get to quickly because I think it would be very, very instructive for us, especially as we look at the things that are happening today. And so we will endeavor to do that. Let's pray. Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful for everything you've given us.